Welcome to the Talent Development Think Tank Podcast, the number one podcast for learning and talent development professionals. Now here's your host, Andy Storch.
Welcome to the Talent Development Think Tank Podcast. I am your host, Andy Storch, and I'm excited that you are here for another great episode and conversation to help you up your game and improve your skills in the world of talent development. And today we're going to be talking about what's going on in talent development. We're going to be talking more about leadership development, maybe a little bit about culture and engagement as well. My guest today is an absolute expert on all of these subjects who has been working in this field for many years now and has also become a good friend. Kevin Cruz is the CEO and founder of LeadX, offering an AI-powered leadership habits building platform. He's also an Inc. 500 and Best Place to Work award-winning entrepreneur, a New York Times bestselling author of 9 books, including 15 Secrets Successful People Know About Time Management and Employee Engagement 2.0. He's also a regular Forbes contributor and was kind enough to write an article about me and my book when it came out in 2020. And he is a keynote speaker and regular advisor to Fortune 500 CEOs and big companies. And this is Kevin's second time on the podcast. The first was episode 81, way back in May of 2019. So it's been a few years, and I'm sure a lot has changed both with Kevin, with me, and especially in the talent development world. So excited to dig in and have you back on. Welcome, Kevin.
Andy, I am excited to be here. We got to work on a shorter bio, though. I mean, people are either going to fast forward or just bail out on that one. That was so long. But I can't believe it's been 2019. Like, I was kind of wondering when that the last official conversation was.
Right. It's crazy. I remember, yeah, we were talking about engagement and a little bit about habits. And we talked about leadership because I think you had recently come out with your book, Great Leaders Have No Rules, which I really enjoyed. And I always think it's funny. I think about our relationship because we connected several years back when you came out with the book, 15 Secrets Successful People Know About Time Management, which I heard you on a podcast and I bought that book and I read it and it was great. I know it's done really well out there. I looked at the reviews on Amazon and it was really helpful for me in thinking about how can I become more productive in my work and had some tips that I still share with people. And of course we connected, I've done a couple of podcast interviews and become friends since then, which I'm grateful for because you've accomplished so much in this space.
Well, I'm grateful for the relationship. It's so funny, that 15 Secrets book, because almost all the books I write are in some way about leadership, engagement, culture. And that was like a passion project. I'm kind of a nut about not do more, but like productivity and balance at the same time, right? And so it's kind of like, what's a book I would want to write that would almost like engage me and be useful to my kids someday? I don't pretend that they're going to want to read it anytime soon.
Right.
And so it's like, you know what, for 1 year, I'll just work on this passion project. That book outsells all the other books combined. And it was totally like just a one-off fun project. And if I was smart, I don't even know the year that it came out. I probably should just update it and keep pushing that one and forget about all the other stuff.
All the other things, right? Adding bonus tips. But I think it's really cool. One lesson I pull out of that is I talk to so many people who say they have a book they want to write or thinking about it. And oftentimes they let fear hold them back, right? Like, what if I put this out there and nobody reads it or it fails or it's not very good or whatever. And oftentimes I come back to like, hey, if you wrote this book and your kids knew that you wrote a book and it was helpful to you, like, would that be worth it? And most of the time the answer is yes, right? Or you just get this out of your head and go through the process. You could have something to still be really proud of. It doesn't matter if it sells tons of copies. And in this case for you, it worked out quite well.
Yeah. And you know, that could apply to so many things, but literally I wanted to write a book for 10 years before I wrote my first book. It took 10 years to write one book. Then in the next 10 years, I wrote one book a year, like, and I'm kind of going to keep on that pace the rest of my life. So what was the difference? And it was exactly what you said. I finally said, when people think of writing a book, they think like, this is the book, right? So it has to be the right book, the best book, a perfect book. And I finally just said, okay, you know what? Like, I'm going to write a book. It's going to be imperfect. I'm going to finish it before I think it's perfect. And I'm going to write the next book. And when you just assume you're going to write 5 books, 10 books, 100 books, you don't get too caught up over any one book anymore. And then exactly your point, I just thought about like, all right, like, you know, I was fortunate with sales on a couple of the books, but like, will this help one person? Will this help my children? Will this document a moment in my life that would be fun to read when I'm 80, right? And if that's it, then good. And then if another 40,000 people buy the book, great, that's a bonus. But let's just focus on that really small circle. And then now they just come pouring out, you know?
Yeah, well, we're going to talk about talent development. We're going to talk about leadership. We're going to talk about engagement. But for those listening, if you are looking for ways to improve productivity, I highly recommend you check that book out, because I still practice things today that I read in that book. I'm going to guess 2016 or 2017 when I read that. So it's been a few years. And of course, 2019 when we last talked. So I know you, Kevin, in addition to running your company LeadX, you've had a successful podcast for a long time in this space by the same name. And you also run community calls and run like group virtual sessions for a lot of people in talent development. So I know, like me, you've kind of got your ear out there. You're talking to a lot of people. You hear about what's going on. Let's just start with the macro. What are some trends that you're seeing and hearing right now in the world of talent development? Obviously, the world's changed a lot since we last talked, including a major pandemic and things going virtual and all that sort of stuff. But you know, now that we're in 2024, what are some of the trends that you're seeing, whether they're good or bad, that you think are really the topics of conversation for a lot of people in talent development right now?
Yeah. I mean, I think most of them are bad. but what comes to mind, and you know, just for your listeners, you're right. So I have a podcast called The Culture Code, where I interview chief people officers. So we've done 40 conversations in the last 6 months on exactly what you just said. Like, what are you seeing? What are you focused on in the year ahead? We run we do an annual benchmark. If people go to leadx.org, you can just download it. You know, asking 150 heads of leadership development a whole bunch of questions. And, you know, the trends continue to be pretty bleak. I mean, last year, benchmark suggests that leadership development budgets in particular have been slashed. And I mean, I had people call me that said, Kevin, I'm going to send you this benchmark survey and it's not a typo. Our budget is now zero for outside resources. LeadX, we lost many clients last year, not because they fired us, because they got fired. They were let go. And so last year was really brutal. And I think what we saw in the data from, you know, just the last 3 months, those that remain with less budget than before, they claim they're going to truly get focused on measuring results, you know, showing that results matter. Now, I'm skeptical because, look, we've had the old Kirkpatrick model that nobody ever uses for ages, right? And when I say nobody, okay, that's a little bit of an exaggeration, but our research shows 61% of heads of leadership development do not even do a level three. They are paid. Their job is to change managers' behaviors, and they are not measuring whether any manager behaviors are changing. That's insane to me. Like, I'll be provocative on your show. I won't be provocative on my own show. But like, should 61% of leadership development, heads of leadership development, be fired? Maybe. Maybe. 61%. Because can you imagine being the head of sales in a company and the CEO is saying, hey, how's it going? You'd better talk about what's in your funnel, what's in your pipeline, what your closing rate is, right? I mean, you need to talk about that. Imagine
or marketing, right? Like, how much are you spending? Where are you spending it?
Marketing.
What kind of, you know, click through or results are you getting?
How many leads did you generate? From which lead source? There are numbers there.
Yeah.
Let's call in our head of leadership development. We just gave you $100,000 last year. We gave you $1 million last year. We gave you $50 million last year. How's it going? Oh, really good. We launched this program on resilience and people gave us 4.2 stars. They really liked it. What the hell? You know, CEO should throw those people out of the office, right? Mm-hmm. So, but this is, I don't know why people don't have, they say, oh my God, it's horrible. We don't get any senior level support. Oh my God, it's horrible. I don't have enough headcount. Oh my God, my budget got cut. Are you showing measurable results to the C-suite? So, trends, I mean, right now, it's that budgets and headcount are cut. So people are claiming that they have to focus on, you know, level three, level fours, but the majority of them are not. How many people are doing level fours? We asked the question. So I'm a friendly interviewer asking my friends, hey, we all know like business impact, what we do is so important. Business impact is important. So are you measuring it? 78% have never done a level four, a business impact analysis on leadership development. Now, the good ones that I talk to that are doing it, they're showing like, hey, We took these emerging leaders, these high potential talented people, put them into an emerging leader program, and we raised their employee engagement by 17%. Or people that graduated from here versus not, you know, are staying in the company 18 months longer on average. Like, it, you can measure it. So you tell, you like hit a hot button on me right out of the gates. But like the folks in leadership development in particular, not all talent development, they've got to be doing a better job. They've got to be doing a job. They are under fire right now.
Yeah.
Tough times for companies or perceived tough times. L&D gets cut, right? It's I've been doing it for over 30 years now. L&D gets cut in every recession, every fear of recession. But if you want your resources, prove that you're spending them wisely. Like, this is absolutely ridiculous. Clearly, there's trends that we can all see where everyone's hyped up about AI, right? And I saw that 5-6 years ago when I started LeadX, and it kind of hyped and crashed. And I think right now it's going to be a little more sustainable. But once again, we've had really powerful AI tools for a while and other digital tools. And L&D will show up at those sessions. They'll read those articles. And they won't fight what they fight. You know, they need to do a good fight internally to say, listen, IT people, you need to come on board and help me figure this out. Hey, CEO, I need 10% more budget to experiment with this. You know, hey, legal, we're not going to get in trouble. We need to take acceptable risk.
Yeah.
And I am not seeing enough people with the professional courage to fight for things like AI in talent development. So,
and even if you don't have that much budget, I'm a big advocate of play as much as you can with AI right now. ChatGPT obviously has a free version for $20 a month. You can get GPT-4. I have several different, you know, platforms and software that I use that's integrating AI that I'm playing with on a daily basis. Some I pay for, some I don't. And I don't feel like I'm an expert, but I'm kind of taking the tack that I'm going to play with this as much as I can every day. I'm telling my team same thing, because if we don't harness it, it's going to disrupt us and take us over, right? And I think that's really going to be true for L&D. If you're not harnessing it and using it, then eventually it's going to take your job.
Yeah. And Andy, I like it. I love that so much. And there's, I think on, you know, social media, like a meme or something going around. I don't even know what it is. It's like saying, will AI take your job? No. Will someone who uses AI take your job? Yes.
Right.
Right. And I'm like you, so I don't consider myself an AI expert, even though, you know, LeadX was very early. We did the world's first AI powered executive coach with IBM Watson, got written up in Wall Street Journal.
Yeah.
I worked at the AT&T Bell Labs AI department as one of my first jobs, blah, blah, blah. I am not an expert in this at all. And yet I have a tab open with GPT-4. I have a tab open with Gemini. And almost every day I'm using it, you know, from the simplest thing of things I would try to search for in Google, I see what comes back because I'm learning. That's a very simple bar. If I'm looking to do any kind of writing, now not everybody's in the content business, but you and I are, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Anything, whether it's social media posts, articles, podcast summaries, et cetera, you know, you could do that. There's tools that will use AI to summarize papers, summarize YouTube videos, et cetera. At LeadX, we're using Synthesia to create AI avatar videos for some of our micro learning videos. We're using GBT to do custom nudges, you know, based on personality and a whole digital twin profile. There's all kinds of tools out there that you can at least be experimenting with. I just did the other day, LeadX ran, you know, a workshop. We did the surveys among participants, and I just uploaded it to check the, you know, uploaded the CSV file and just started asking, what was the average satisfaction score? Give me the mean, give me the median.
Yeah.
What was the lowest score in that group? What about all the open-ended feedback? What were the top three themes? Oh, could have used an 90 minutes instead of 60 minutes. How many people said that? Three people said that. It's like having a data analyst. And all I did, I have a $20 a month tool. And now instead of trying to do all that data myself or just scanning it, upload the file and you just interview the AI. I mean, that is such a simple but useful tool to use.
It's amazing. We did a community session in the Talent Development Think Tank community recently where I just asked people to share what AI tools are you using in your job. And one person shared that they took their engagement survey and ran it through, I don't know if it was GPT-4 or some AI tool, just said, summarize this. What are the takeaways? What are the things that we need to go take action on? Instead of having someone poring over data for weeks like you would in the old days, just have AI summarize it. And I don't know if those engagement companies are using AI yet to provide that summary, but it's not that hard to go and do.
That's right. That's right. Well, other than AI, which is kind of the obvious one, I mean, what are you seeing in your community?
Well, you know, I agree with you on the budget cuts, companies getting leaner in general. I think that we're seeing that. You know, I'm just one thing I've been thinking about lately as I have a lot of conversations with corporate professionals in L&D and otherwise, is it seems like people are working harder than before, that, you know, the companies have cut back on resources. And so they're being asked to do more, more with less, that kind of old adage. And I think I'm worried that that is going to impact people, you know, from a mental health perspective and, you know, other things. I don't know what else is going to happen with organizations. That's a big one. AI is certainly one that people are talking about. You know, skills is still big, but I think that's one that's like, it's such a popular buzzword. And to me, it's even less easy to understand than AI right now. It's like, okay, what does that mean that I need to prepare for the skills of the future?
Right.
But I think that's going to trend towards organizations looking more for how do we fill certain gaps and roles and projects, maybe moving towards more project-based work and, you know, less like defined role that you stay in for 2-3 years, whatever it may be, based on the skills that people are needing. And then I see and hear the most common thing that comes up when I talk with people in L&D, who ask, what are you working on? It's leadership. It's leadership development, right? And so you brought up leadership, and I wanted to talk to you about that today. Because that should be, not only is it the number one thing people are working on, it's probably the number one development category that's still getting budget. And I feel like leaders impact so much, it should be the one where it's easiest to measure the impact. So how would you, you're smiling as I say that, like, how do you think about when you talk to people about, you know, creating a new leadership development program or doing things to develop leaders, how do you think about putting that program in place and making sure that it is, you are able to measure the impact and make a strong business case for, you know, using the money wisely?
Yeah. So, I mean, again, we've seen, unfortunately, even leadership development budgets get cut, but it just makes these measurement issues more important. So not to go too deep on this, you know, I'm sure we have a time limit on our conversation, but again, the problem is it's that old Covey thing, like begin with the end in mind. And I'm finding too many talent dev professionals are not clear on what the end is. So for example, you know, we'll get called and said, we want to launch a new frontline manager training program. We don't have one yet. Great. Empty slate, all this kind of stuff. What do you want? What are you trying to train them in? What skills do you want them to have? And sometimes they'll say competency model. Okay. So they have a competency model. That's not a bad place to start. I then do wonder, like, about competency models. Okay, so you picked 6 competencies out of Korn Ferry's book of dozens, right? Your company has a bunch of things. Are we sure those things are driving sales, driving innovation, driving, like, has anyone even measured that? Or it's just, these are what everybody does, you have them and all that. But this, before you train people in them, it's a good time to pause and look at that. For example, less common, we know, like, after decades and thousands of pieces of data, research out there, there's about 12 drivers that improve employee engagement. You know, I like to call it your leadership intelligence, your LQ. So it's going to be, number one is future vision. That's the biggest variable. Number two is psychological safety, trust. And these are things people are all familiar with, right? Yep. And yet, so if you said, what do you really want your managers to do? Well, I want them to get results, and I want them to create fiercely loyal, productive teams, highly engaged teams. Great. Well, then train them on those 12 behaviors that lead to highly engaged teams. But people don't usually do that. It's like, oh, we're going to teach this coaching model, this very common coaching model.
Yeah.
Okay. Why? Well, coaching's a good idea. Now, I do believe coaching's a good idea, but it's like, are you going to measure anything about coaching? So we struggle with getting clients, like, often they have topics they want to train with no real reason why they pick those topics. So let's set that aside. But what we do say is, and we've done this, okay, you want to teach grow coaching. We always say learning is necessary, but not sufficient for behavior change. We're not anti-learning. Learning's necessary, but you're the knowing doing gap. No one's going to change by showing up to your 1-hour webinar, your 1-day workshop, your whatever it is. Learning's necessary, but insufficient for behavior change. So what are all the things you're going to do? I like to call it the 3-to-1 model. For one learning thing, you're going to learn grow coaching. What are at least three things, ideally 12, but three things that you're going to do after that learning event to make sure people are applying it, practicing it, mindset shifting, all the things a coach would have you do to get better at coaching. And then we say, what's the measurable impact? So with Grow Coaching, we like to do a 180 survey on managers. And we ask, okay, Andy's your boss. How many coaching conversations has he had with you in the previous 30 days? Oh, zero, one? Okay, we've got an average. Hmm. Let's go, let's give Andy some Grow Coaching training. Let's give Andy, you know, a month to 3 months of follow-up, and let's drop another 180 survey. Hey, your boss is Andy. How many times did he have a coaching conversation with you in the last 30 days? Oh, twice? Okay, that's 100% improvement, you know, since then. So we can measure, like, are they doing more of this thing? Effective feedback, Grow Coaching, talking about vision, holding a career conversation, whatever those things are. So there's activity metrics that you really can measure before and after, and we get positive measures, you know, all the time, or a rating scale. So back to like psychological safety. Andy should be driving, fostering a psychologically safe environment. That's hard to measure as behaviors, but you can measure the perception. So let's, before we do psych safety training, mm-hmm. let's do that 180 survey on a scale of 1 to 5. You know, your manager, Andy, fosters, you know, a community, a sense of community, safety, belonging. Okay, yeah, Andy does a pretty good job. We'll give him a 4. Great, good score. 3 months later, let's drop that survey again. Is he fostering a community of belonging, of safety, you know, strong community? You know, 5s and 4s. Okay, Andy's score went from 4 to 4.5. So there's ways to measure actual, he's doing more coaching, she is doing more coaching, or the team's perception of things like trust, safety, vision, that perception is going up. But those are two simple ones that people almost never do. If you want to take it a step further, let's actually show impact on employee engagement. I mean, that's my favorite. Okay, we're measuring drivers of employee engagement. What about engagement itself? Okay, we put, before Andy started this leadership program, the engagement level on his team was 3.8. Good, but not great. 6 months later, let's do another pulse survey. Engagement on that team is 4.1. That is a massive spike in employee engagement. Hmm. So whether it's perceptions, you know, from the team members, actual behavior change, or business outcomes like employee engagement, all those things should be getting measured, you know, tied back to these training programs.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing is, when you're talking about, you're thinking about creating a new leadership development program, oftentimes, and I hear the same thing, people will say, well, we're including these elements of the program. We want to improve coaching or feedback or resilience or trust, and they throw things out. Maybe, I don't know if you asked this, maybe I don't have the courage yet to ask, like, why those things and like, how did you even get there? And sometimes it's data-driven. Oftentimes it's probably like picked because they're just like, well, I feel like they need those things. Or the CEO or some executive said, I think our people need these things, right? And maybe, yeah. I don't know if enough questions have been asked, but really beginning with the end in mind and think, well, what is it that you're trying to drive? What's the result you're trying to drive? And then what are the things that are going to help us get there? If you want to drive more engagement, then you want your leaders to build more psychological safety, share more of their future vision, build more trust. And you can measure whether that trust score has gone up, whether the psychological safety score has gone up as a result of going through this program.
Yeah. And Andy, that's right. And you're, to your point of like, I mean, I asked the question, why these topics? And I'm really hard, obviously, on talent development professionals because I want us to do better. I'm not trying to provoke people. I want to provoke a conversation, right? About how we can do better. And the reality is, this is going to sound harsh, but most L&D professionals are order takers, right? So mm-hmm. it's like they just don't have the power, the authority, the budget to do what they think is best. Very often, they don't have any budget until someone says from above, quote unquote above, we, you know what, this is the year of whatever. And it might be well-intended. This is the year of DEI. This is the year of coaching. This is the year of resilience. This is like, these are great topics. But they're not the ones that are making the business case for what it needs. It's often for whatever reason, you know, the CEO goes off to some McKinsey forum or some, you know, retreat, and here's a buddy CEO talking about some vendor they use. It often gets assigned. So I try to ask, like, why? Why these? What are you actually trying to accomplish? And then will this training program do that? But very often the answer is like, look, because it came down from the top, like, I don't have any control over this, you know?
Yeah.
So I get that part of it too.
Yeah. I mean, I always ask those questions. Certainly when anyone reaches out to me to give a keynote or run a training program, been doing a lot of keynotes lately. And I always ask, okay, what are your objectives? What do you want people to walk away from this? Like, what, what's your vision for this? Right. What would make it great? I want to make sure that we address those things. And that often ends with me tweaking the keynote I normally give, because I want to make sure that I address those objectives and that we're hitting the things that they want to hit.
Right.
I probably could do a better job of asking the second or third why of, like, why do you want to drive those? Right. I don't want to put too many L&D people on the spot. They're like, well,
I don't, cause I was going to say in that scenario, you only ask enough questions to get the deal. Then yeah. You can ask more questions after the,
that's contract. Right. That's right. Don't want to put it in a bad spot. I want to get the deal. But I want to make sure that what I'm doing is making an impact. And I really love what you said about the 3-1 model. Some people might be familiar with that. I'm writing down lots of notes and ideas over here as you're talking. I also love, if we could go back to the 12 drivers of employee engagement, I want to go back to leadership development, but I also want to talk about what is driving employee engagement these days, because the world has changed since the last time we talked, at least on this podcast in 2019, right? Pandemic has changed a lot. So many people and companies have a remote setup now, or hybrid workforce. There are a lot of companies that are bringing people back to the office, and then a lot of people asking the question, well, why should I, or why do I need to be there if I'm just going to be sitting on Zoom all day? And so I think a lot of companies and people are trying to figure this out. And we know that, hey, 2024, where we are right now, we might be in a kind of a tougher labor market, we'll say, but eventually things will pick back up and there'll be another war for talent. And people are going to say, I want to know that I want to feel engaged in my job. I want to feel fulfilled and I want to feel like I'm growing. So what can companies do to create a more inviting, exciting culture and to drive more engagement in the workforce?
Yeah. So, and we gather this data every year. And so how people are engaged at work has not changed for decades, because humans are humans and it's a psychological construct. However, with the new world of work, how we trigger these things may be different. So let me start with Gallup research suggests that 70% of the variance in employee engagement goes back to who our manager is. So doesn't really matter, you know, who the CEO, it's not that it doesn't matter, but the big variable is your manager. The manager is the filter of all things good, bad, et cetera. So you could have a strong company, weak manager, you're not going to be very engaged. So it's all about that grassroots manager. Now, what do people need to feel engaged? It's the same thing. So it's going to be a belief, what we call future vision, you know, that the future is going to be brighter than the present, that there's going to be no repercussions for me to make mistakes or give a dumb idea or whatever, psychological safety. It's trust. It's a career conversation. It's getting feedback. It's one-on-one meetings. One new driver, this is the exception to the rule that things don't change. Since the pandemic, meeting efficiency is now a top 5 driver of employee engagement. So we all used to complain about meetings, right? It's like, too many meetings, long meetings, boring meetings. Now it's actually a major driver of engagement. Hmm. We're juggling, we're at home, we're doing Zooms, et cetera. Like we're all busier than ever before. We need efficient meetings. But what has changed? So like the factors primarily haven't changed. But if Andy's my boss, how is Andy going to drive a sense of future vision when we only see each other in person, you know, with the full team once a year, maybe twice a year? It's all through Zoom. So what used to be natural or would pick up in osmosis and the meetings after the meetings, Andy, the manager, has to be very intentional. Like, okay, in my weekly team huddles, I'm going to be talking about, I'm going to remind everyone about the mission of the company, you know, how important the work we're doing. In my monthlies, I'm going to talk about our strategic plan. In my one-on-one, or when I give recognition, I'm going to make sure the recognition is strategic, meaning I'm going to say, Kevin, thank you. Want to make sure he's recognized for working the weekend. Okay, what's the behavior that you want to, you know, reinforce? Because of that, it really demonstrates you living our value of customer service, and we were able to ship that product on time, which is going to help our quarterly numbers. So it's harder as a leader to instill future vision. It's harder to give feedback when we're doing these like 30 minute to the minute back-to-back Zooms. You know, it doesn't just happen over, hey, you know, you got to meet Andy or after the meeting, or hang out after this meeting, right? It's harder. We have to make calendar time for these things. And so how people are engaged, those psychological variables don't change. How we activate them in the world of remote does change, you know, and it's harder. With all those calls I did with the CPOs last year for the Culture Code podcast, I would ask, like, I would start because I was curious about that context. Hey, you know, where did your company land? Back to work, fully remote, hybrid. And it was all over the place. Right. And most of them, now these are the CPOs, so, and they're being recorded, so maybe they're not going to say, oh yeah, it's a cluster, you know, it's not working well. They're all saying, like, it's working, we're making it work, you know, kind of thing. But if there was one right formula, all companies would be doing it, right? So there's not. My sense is more and more organizations are calling people back to work, you know, 2-3 days a week. But like my book, Great Leaders Have No Rules, the whole point is companies that make rules, people will outsmart the rules. You can't do that. So now you've got this phenomenon where they talk about coffee badging, right? So it's like, oh, I have to be in the office 2 days this week, but it makes no sense because it's not the days my boss is in. We're not doing team meetings. Like, there's no real purpose. Fine. I'll show up in the morning. I'll badge in. I'll get my cup of coffee, do some emails in the cafeteria, and I'm going to go the freak home, right? And it's such a, like, people will always outwit the system. I've heard in Europe that most companies are back to the office, like they're not doing hybrid. Is that true?
I'm not sure. I have to look into that. It certainly seems like a lot of people out and about where I live, but you know, it could be the case. Maybe that's influenced by the fact that people have smaller, you know, domiciles, apartments, and things like that. And it's like, okay, I'm not set up to work from home.
Yeah.
I mean, think about how much things changed for people looking for a place to live, or they're just, I'm going to sleep here and hang out with my family, to I also need a space to work. And if you live in the suburbs in any city in the US, this is not a big problem. But if you live in a city, whether it's New York City or Chicago or most cities in Europe, there's not really a good working space there set up. So I would imagine, and you know, we're populations are more densely packed together in most European cities, that people are like, no, I want to go back to the office because I'm crammed into this little table in a corner here. So there's a lot, I think there's a lot of factors that influence what companies need and want and what people want, right? What stage of life they're in. I never heard of this term coffee badging. So you heard it here first, folks. I like that one. It seems like a new TikTok, thing like quiet quitting. I'll look for more memes on that in the future. But I think it speaks to the idea that if you want your people to come to the office, and I think there are plenty of reasons to justify wanting or even forcing people to come back into the office, because it does create that culture where people are talking and collaborating more, but there needs to be a good reason and there needs to be a good result that people feel like, oh, I came here and I'm glad I came here because I'm building relationships with coworkers and we're collaborating on projects, versus I came here to just do email and get on Zoom. Why did I come here and waste my time in my car? That's the big thing that you got to figure out.
I think, you know, just to spend a little bit more time, because I think people are interested in this topic.
Yeah.
So I don't know that there is an ideal answer for both the organization and the individual, or that you want to push it to ideal. And this is very real. So LeadX is fully remote. We've always been fully remote. Half the company's in California. A bunch of us are outside Philadelphia, and it's worked fine. I'm getting ready to hire a new employee. And so we're talking about onboarding and getting together physically and all this kind of stuff. And it did occur to me, as I just said, like, we've been fully remote and we're just fine. I think about my earlier companies, Andy. So, you know, again, I've been doing this for 30 years. So I had started and sold several different training companies. And those were in person. And I was younger, in my 20s and my 30s. And it was back in what today would be viewed as unhealthy, right? Like a whole bunch of young single people working their butts off early to late, and then going out for drinks, like that whole world that doesn't exist anymore, right? And I'm thinking about it. And it's like, oh, my head of sales, who I hired when I was 28, is now the CEO of one of my companies, you know, doing, they're doing $300 million a year. He went from selling sneakers to being my sales guy to now he's this massive success. Several other of my project managers who just, I didn't have a formal training program. They just, we were together many hours a day, every day for like 5 years, 7 years. They went off and built these huge companies and all that stuff. And I'm thinking about the people now at LeadX where I see them twice a year in person and the rest is Zoom. And we're doing fine, but they are not, I have not brainwashed them and they have not brainwashed
not the
me
same culture.
The way we did in the old model. Right. And it doesn't mean I want to go back to the old model. Like, I don't want that for myself anymore.
Right.
And it's expensive and I don't think they want it.
Yeah.
But there is something to like immersive culture.
Yep.
And so, again, every organization has to figure it out for themselves. But I think it's inevitable that something's going to be lost when you're not 5 days a week sitting shoulder to shoulder on things.
Yep.
I mean, there's things to gain also, but you do lose something.
No, completely agree. Last thing I want to ask you about, Kevin, is habits. I know this is something that you're big on. I'm big on as well. I've used habits to help me achieve a lot of things.
Yeah.
And it's part of what you do with LeadX. Maybe you just talk about how habits play into the work that you do. You mentioned the 3-1 model, like reinforcing learning and how that can be used for leaders or anyone else in an organization.
Yeah, that's right. And I think it's especially relevant for leadership development. You think about manager habits, leader habits, but really it could be anything. And so I'll go back to what I say. It's like, you know, learning is necessary, but not sufficient. If you want to form a habit or break a habit, you know, it takes 30 to 90 days to do that with repetition and triggers and cues. And so, you know, the LeadX platform is all about what is it you're trying to build a habit around? Is it coaching? Is it feedback? Is it being more resilient? Practices that drive resilience. What are those things? And sure, there's learning components, whether they're live or micro learning the flow of work. But then the system is like, okay, let's send you one or two nudges a week. And based on your digital twin, so an AI term, we know your personality, we know the personality of your team members, we know your employee engagement scores, we know your competency model, we know the programs you've taken, and we know what you're trying to get better at right now. What's one or two micro actions a week you can do to get better at that thing? And then ideally measure results before and afterwards. So we, especially with how busy everyone, you know, again, I remember when whatever the topic was, oh, we want you to be a better coach. We want you to be more resilient. We want you to be more creative. Everything was a 5-day program. You flew in Monday morning, you flew out Friday afternoon.
Yeah.
Wow, that sounds crazy. Okay, well, everything was a 2-day program. Then it was a 1-day program. Now it's like fighting, you know, to get an hour, right? Yeah. We just asked, what's the most common length of a training program? 60 minutes. Zoom, right?
Yep.
So there's no way we are affecting behavior change or forming habits with one and done events, one and done learning events. You need the learning event, and then you need many weeks of micro actions if you truly want that to stick and to become a habit.
Yeah, completely agree. I was thinking today, I think a lot about habits and how they drive success for me. And I take really big goals and break them down. And if I learn something and I'm like, okay, I want to do this, I want to accomplish this goal, whether it's building my business, getting healthier, building a better relationship with my kids or my wife, building better mental resilience, it all comes down to habits. You know, my daily meditation habit,
right.
I've got a daily, you know, streak practicing Spanish now on Duolingo. Like if I ever want to, although I really need to ratchet that up if I'm ever really going to learn Spanish. 10 minutes a day is probably not going to cut it. But some things, it's enough to just do a little bit a day and it will add up to the bigger results at the end. So I'm glad you mentioned that. Yeah. I think it's something people can use personally and we can definitely use with leaders, reinforcing what they're learning in programs, whether it's a 1-hour Zoom or a full day program, whatever it is. Kevin, this has been great. There's so much more we could talk about with regards to leadership development, engagement, habits, all these things. We'll have to do another conversation soon, but I'm looking forward to chatting with you more. You're going to hang on because we're going to do our bonus Q&A. But for anybody that wants to follow you, learn more about what you're doing, I know you have the Culture Code podcast, you've got leadx.org, you're pretty active on LinkedIn, and you run some live sessions and things with L&D people as well, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think you covered it. Obviously, people listening to this are podcast listeners. Just search on the Culture Code on Spotify or wherever you listen. LeadX.org if you want to download the benchmark study. And I love connecting with people on LinkedIn. Kevin Kruse, it's Kruse. And, you know, love to connect to everyone, you know, on LinkedIn as well.
Awesome. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you for being here. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Definitely appreciate you sharing the episode, subscribing. Saw some great shares on LinkedIn recently. Love helping people out there grow in their talent development careers. We got more great episodes coming in the future. And if you want more and you want to connect with people in the talent development world, hear what people are working on, hear from great speakers like Kevin and others, come join us in our Talent Development Think Tank membership community. All the information is on our website, tdtt.us. We've got guest speakers and great calls every other week. We'll have to try to get Kevin booked to come lead a call for us in the future on some of these topics we talked about. We'll be working on that, as well as many other great speakers coming. So check out our website, tdtt.us. You've got everything there, leadx.org for Kevin's stuff. And thank you again for listening. I hope that you will take action on some of the things you learned today. You'll think about becoming a little bit more strategic, about measuring the impact and becoming a strategic part of the organization, and that you'll do something kind for yourself and others today. Take care.